First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
Halfway home on a Wednesday afternoon. Which I guess I'm starting to do this every week now. Every time I say that, I'm like, hey, we're halfway home for the week, officially. 2.5 shows in the books, 2.5 more to go as we roll on here. Sports Map Radio. And, you know, it's interesting. Just talked a little bit about the last segment, about how basically my soapbox segment to tell everybody, do what makes you happy with your free time. And even if it's the same three things, you don't have to have more. And that was, last night was kind of a reminder of that for me, being a sports nerd. And nerd is the appropriate term. I won't run from that. 4 hours of mock drafting and talking Eagles with my friends. And loved every minute of it. So the way this transitions here into what I wanted to talk about with Tua Tagovailoa is, it's pretty clear that Tua Tagovailoa really likes playing football. And before we get into the contemplating retirement stuff, I'll just say that that's something I want that kind of guy on my team, particularly quarterback. If you got somebody that really just loves the game, right? And it's funny because this Tua stuff comes up now, peak draft season. When it comes to evaluating prospects, we always hear about, like, do you love the game? How much do they want it? What's the character like of this guy? And in the case of a Tua, like, he must love the game to keep coming back. And the thing that I really don't like, and I'm sure there are people that have already castigated the guy for not stepping away already and feel like he, you know, is making a poor decision, it is his life. And he's allowed to do it, to spend it however he wants. And so I really don't like when there's that sect of sports fans that will basically dictate or make it seem like a personal decision as to somebody's well-being is the right or wrong decision. You know, we can criticize a free agent for picking to play somewhere that might not be the, you know, best place to win. And you can talk about certain destinations that players choose and question why they do that. But when it comes to, like, the personal, professional line, like, a lot of it, I'm sure, is very personal for Tua. This is his body, and this is his livelihood playing football. And I just think when athletes have to face those kind of decisions, same thing with the guys that do decide to step away. You know, we've seen it. Linebacker, I feel like Luke Kuechly and Patrick Willis, you know.
Hell, Andrew Luck even.
Andrew Luck was another one, right. Like, you know what? It's a little disappointing if you're a Colts fan, but, like, he got booed. I mean, like, that was really, I think, in poor taste. And it's hard. It's got to be hard, and we'll play the cut now. Here was Tua talking about the fact that after going through all the concussions he went through in 2022, he did think about retiring.
I think I considered it, for a time, having sat down with my family, having sat down with my wife and having those kind of conversations. But really, it would be hard for me to walk away from this game with how old I am, with my son. I always dreamed of growing, you know, playing as long as I could to where my son knew exactly what, you know, he was watching his dad do. And it's my health, it's my body, you know, and I feel like this is what's best for me and my family. So love the game of football. If I didn't, I would have quit a long time.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's some people that hear that, well, yeah, it's your health and your body, but you're crazy. Like, no, he's not crazy. Like, he's allowed to pick a path with his professional life that makes him happy.
But I think people are allowed to call him crazy as well. For if they believe that it's crazy, why can't you criticize
him
on this?
Like, it's his own life. Like, if I want to do something that you think is crazy, then tell me why it's crazy. If you haven't been through it, then you can't relate. Like, you shouldn't be saying that.
No, I understand, but we have. Tua is in the line, like in the spotlight. He's an NFL quarterback. We have doctors. We have real research that says these. You know, this could be dangerous for him. I don't think it's. I'm not going to criticize him, but I don't think it's out of line for somebody to say that he shouldn't be playing.
Are all football players crazy?
Maybe.
Maybe. Couldn't this happen to any football? Like, if this is the inherent risk of playing football.
But it happened to him, like, back to back to back. Like,
there's got to be a, like, tipping point where, like, he can't be the only person that suffered multiple concussions. So.
He's definitely not, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But all of those players.
So all the ones that decide to keep playing are crazy?
It should be a real thought, is what I'm saying. It should be a real thought. Like, I'm going back to your point saying people shouldn't tell him what to do. No, they shouldn't tell him what to do, but they have a right to their opinion. He's a National Football League quarterback.
I just think it's a lame opinion if you're talking about something that you yourself can't relate with, and therefore, like, you're still saying he's crazy just because you have doctors and scientists.
Well, I don't
like,
have to have had three concussions to relate or to understand what's going on and have an opinion about it. Just like I don't have to go out on the mound and throw 90 pitches to be able to criticize Justin Verlander. Like, you don't have to go through the same thing to understand it and criticize it. I just think that you're not crossing a line here if you have that opinion. In my thought,
I'm just wondering why that's. It just doesn't feel like something you should have a strong opinion. Like, too many people, maybe that's what I'm saying. Too many people have too strong opinions on something they've never been through. And if the conversation was not, because I argue about this with my dad a lot. My dad doesn't watch football. And it bothers me because it's like, okay, like, it almost feels like there's like an agenda on his part where it's just like, well, you know, I don't like football, and, you know, this is an easy way to tear down the sport. So, this guy's an idiot for, you know, still playing football. Like, I think there's other people, like, that carry that same thought process.
See, yeah, and I think calling him an idiot or defaming him or going after him is one thing. But to have an opinion and say, if I was Tua, I would not continue to play football for my greater health, that I don't have an issue
maybe
with
just,
that.
Okay, if you believe that, all I'm asking is, be a little bit more diplomatic.
Absolutely.
Because I think that this is a very personal thing. Like, and I use that word a lot because different guys are going to have different views on what they should do, and there's no wrong answer as far as I'm concerned. So, Patrick Willis, Andrew Luck, Luke Kuechly, Calvin Johnson, you know, whoever retires early, that's fine. I'll see you in Canton. And for the ones that want to keep playing, and you hear him talking about the importance of the game to his family and his son, again, this means a lot to these guys. Okay, that's another thing I don't like is when people that aren't as into sports paint the guys that do play between the lines as just, you know, out for the money. And there are guys like that like look at the highest achieving of, okay, did I sign the biggest contract? Like, how much did I make in endorsements? Like, and the wanting to win is not as important. And the family side of sports and being able to do it in front of your wife and kids is not as important. But I like the ones that are like Tua because those are qualities we can all relate with. We can't all relate with making millions of dollars. We can't all relate with signing these big endorsement deals. But we can relate with wanting to make loved ones happy through work that we do. And we can relate if we're sports people, or even if you're not a sports person, you might be pretty competitive and you might want to win in whatever it is that you do. So if that's his motivation to keep playing, like, maybe that's why I just get behind it a little bit more. Because there's a little bit more of a, you know, an ability to identify with that, an ability to connect with it. And those are the kind of guys I like. So, yeah, I like the ones that are like the Manny Machados or the Ben Simmons, the ones that are kind of hot shots and they just kind of don't have much motivation to get better, or, you know, they feel like they're, hey, they're living the life. You know, I'm got my big money contract in San Diego or wherever it is, and, you know, I'm hanging out on the beach all the time. Like, that's that kind of like I'm better than everybody else already, so I've done it mindset that I don't like. And there's a lot of guys that are in sports that are like that. But I think when you get faced with as much personal and physical adversity as Tua has been faced with in the last 12 months of his life, and you still come back to, you know, wanting to be able to play in front of your son and, you know, having the wife and kids, and, you know, the Dolphins are a contender. They were in the playoffs and even down to their third quarterback almost beat the Bills last year. Like, all of that, I admire if that is ultimately your biggest motivation to keep playing. So, good for you, Tua. And definitely hope that you have a nice, healthy season and you guys win the AFC East, which you might be able to this year, and, you know, take it from there. All right, we haven't done a ton of playoff talk other than our guest spot in the first hour. So we'll react a little bit to one of the games from the NBA playoffs last night, and we'll do some Stanley Cup playoff talk as well. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
Back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Okay, so I feel like most of the teams at the bottom seeds in the NBA playoffs follow a similar formula where you look at them and you look at their rosters and say, yeah, that best player, yeah, he's pretty good. That second best player, he's not bad. But their top-end guys are just pretty good, and then they don't have a ton of depth. And so basically what that leaves is a team that's good enough to beat up on the cellar dwellers, hence get into the playoffs, but also a team that doesn't really go anywhere when you get into the playoffs and you're playing teams that are deeper who also have better top-end talent. And there is one of these teams that is a low seed whose season is probably going to be over by the weekend. And I feel like their best player is at least widely viewed as more than just pretty good. I'm talking about the Atlanta Hawks, and I'm talking about Trae Young. Because let's not forget that 2 years ago, Atlanta was in the conference finals, and I believe the Sixers choked in the second round against the Hawks. They lost three games in that series at home. But Trae Young was an outstanding college achiever at Oklahoma. He was a top five pick in the 2018 NBA draft. And, you know, he, I think to some extent, gave some people some Steph Curry vibes, where you watch him pull up from 35 feet and always thought it could go in. But when we have these kinds of players who are maybe on the precipice of star versus superstar, or however you want to label them, I do think it's important to ask yourself, why is his team at the bottom of the conference in the playoff seeds? Like, why are they seventh in the East? And, you know, the Hawks were in the play-in tournament last year, and they were the eighth seed. And while it may not be fair, because there are plenty of instances in which the best player on one of these teams maybe takes too much flack for and is criticized too much when he maybe just doesn't have enough around him. I don't know that that's necessarily the case with Trae Young, because whether you believe the Sixers choke or the Hawks went out and won the series 2 years ago, this team made the conference finals. Like, the conference finals is no joke. Like, that you're one of four left still playing. And Trae Young, we had a guest on from 6-8 to the Fan last week, John Michaels, in Atlanta, talking about, well, if Trae Young doesn't get hurt in that series, maybe the Hawks win it and they're in the finals. And while you can look at some of the other things that have happened with the Hawks in terms of their roster and, you know, some of the things around Trae Young crumbling a little bit, they had a coaching change, and attribute that to part of the, you know, dwindling through the Eastern Conference to the point where they are this kind of going nowhere 7 or 8 seed. But I also think you have to look at Trae Young and say, wait a second. Because how many times do we see a superstar, I don't care who else is on the team, be this overmatched in the first round of a playoff series? I mean, maybe like Russell Westbrook when he was still in Oklahoma City when Kevin Durant was gone and Westbrook won an MVP. You know, maybe Nikola Jokic, but, you know, the last few years in Denver, like last year Denver was the 6th seed and got lost in 5, excuse me, to Golden State, but they didn't have Jamal Murray. Like, we knew that they were down a piece. This Atlanta team, I feel like people had lofty expectations for, and, you know, once the eulogy is, the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, the season will be over, and they'll have some real, I think, soul-searching to do as to what happened. And they lost again last night. The Celtics, I think, are going to sweep them. And I don't always like agreeing with the Boston faithful, but once the outcome was really in order, here was what the Boston fans were serenading towards Trae Young.
Overrated the chat right now.
Oh.
He did come on the podium. I thought he did. As the most overrated. I'm pretty sure he was.
Yeah.
I mean, he did go to a conference finals.
So there you go, right? Like, yeah, that's probably the Celtics announcer saying, hey, he did go to a conference finals, which I just acknowledged, but they've gone backwards since. And I think the face of the franchise, if that's what he is, you should look at him and be a little bit critical of him. Because this is the nature of the NBA. It's all about the players and the superstars, and are they superstars, and can you win with him as your best player? And, okay, one season where you go backwards, all right. Another season, and you've added DeJounte Murray this year, he didn't have last year, and we're singing the same tune. And the other point about that conference finals run that they made a couple years ago, which John Bellmer brought up in show prep, Trae Young kind of had in that playoffs, I mentioned the Sixers series, the round prior against the Knicks, he kind of had a moment where we all said, oh, like, that was pretty cool. Like, the face of the franchise for the Atlanta Hawks, Trae Young was really jousting and going back and forth with the New York fans at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden, and he became the villain in New York. And here's the thing. If you're a villain somewhere, it's also because you're really good, usually. Nobody talks about the sixth guy on the bench as the villain. So I guess I just look at this now and think, you know what? Trae Young is a little bit overrated. Because somewhere along the line here, he's going to be able to lift the Hawks up in this series. And I don't know that it's necessarily coming when the series shifts to Atlanta. Like, it just feels like the Hawks are outmatched. And I don't think that should exclusively apply to the fact that they're just the worst. They're just not as good. At least in the NBA. Like, this is the culture of the NBA. Like, we all look at the players and the individuals. And, you know, you look at Trae Young in this series. 24 points last night, but 9 for 22 shooting. 16 points in game one, 5 for 18 shooting. He was a minus 18 last night. He was a minus 14 in game one. Go back to last year's first round. He was a minus 22 in game one, a minus 11 in game two, a minus 27 in game four, and a minus 3 in game five. His only positive plus minus was in game three, which was the one game that the Atlanta Hawks won. And, you know, a lot of these games, again, his field goal percentages are putrid. I mean, he had one game where he was 3 for 11, another game where he was 2 for 12. In the first game against Miami last year, he was 1 for 12 from the field. Like, it's garbage. These game logs the last couple years for Trey. I guess I just have seen enough now. He's still young, no pun intended. Could still get better. But.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you think this is like a work ethic thing.
Maybe. Because I'll tell you this. I don't want Trae Young as my best player if I'm starting from scratch right now in the NBA. And that's where the Hawks will have to really look, I think, moving forward into, you know, how they construct their teams and what they do. Because not only does he not take games over, I mean, you heard me just reel off some of the stats. Like, he's just shocked in the playoffs. And I just think that it's important to acknowledge, like I said, there's a lot of teams that are 7-8 seeds where you just say, oh, you know, like take Minnesota, for example. Karl Anthony Towns, pretty good player. I don't know that he's a superstar. You know, Rudy Gobert, nice one-way player. Anthony Edwards, really good player, probably not a superstar. And then, you know, the depth kind of, you don't have as much of it, and that's how you get an 8 seed. But I think we do look at Trae Young, at least some people wanted to look at him and say, this guy is a superstar, or he's at the very least a star. I'm not really sure. I think he's just another pretty good player. So, is he overrated? Kind of agree with the Boston faithful right now. We'll take a timeout. Let's go to the ice. The Minnesota Wild and Dallas Stars looks to be a pretty competitive series in the Western Conference. We'll talk about it with Dane Musiatani next.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
Well, it has been a great start for the road teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs as all four won last night, and a pair of road teams won in the opening night of the playoffs on Monday. One of those teams on Monday that picked up a road win was the Minnesota Wild, and we're going to go out to the Progressive Guest Line now to talk more about the series between Minnesota and Dallas, which resumes tonight at American Airlines Center in Dallas. We bring on Dane Musiatani from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, covers the Wild, joins us right now on the Progressive Guest Line. Dane, good to have you aboard. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, doing pretty well myself. And the big thing that I want to ask you about, you know, covering the team, being around them these last 48 hours, I always feel, and it's kind of cliche to have this reaction, but anytime you have that kind of a long game, you know, two overtimes, it was a later start to begin with on Monday night, if there's any carryover, and could you sense maybe a little bit more of a, you know, energetic Wild bunch the last couple days, and do you think Dallas might be a little bit deflated?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak to Dallas because I haven't been around their room a ton, but I know the Wild, winning that game was a huge boost for them, energy-wise. I think it's something when a game bleeds into the 1 a.m. hour and you lose, that can be extremely, you know, wind out of the sails. We walked into that Wild locker room around 1:15 a.m. on Monday. I guess it would be Tuesday morning. and every, you know, smiles, hooting and hollering, everyone's, you know, ready to go, and that's really carried over the last 2 days. The Wild want to go home to St. Paul with a 2-0 lead in this series. That would be a tremendous advantage. They understand that. They know that Dallas is going to come out desperate tonight, but I don't expect, just because it went late, these guys to have any lack of energy. I think the Wild understand the task at hand, and they know they have to show up and play really, really hard and really, really well tonight.
You know, I'm so intrigued by the goaltending in this series because Philip Gustafson was outstanding for Minnesota on Monday night. And obviously, Jake Ottinger, it's been well documented going back to last Stanley Cup playoffs, just how dominant he can be for Dallas. So how did you kind of view the goalie matchup going in? And, you know, how did game one kind of impact your view on the goalie's impact the rest of the series?
Yeah, just watching Jake Ottinger, and obviously he's from Minnesota, so we've known mm-hmm. about this kid for a while. But I got to watch just from afar, last year, and obviously the people in this market understand better. But what he did against the Calgary Flames in the playoffs, and watching Jake Ottinger do that in his playoff debut, I expected him to be really good in Game One. I'm not sure what I expected out of Philip Gustafson. He's been one of the best goalies, at least statistics wise, in the NHL this season. But if you would have told me he's going to go double overtime, have 51 saves in his playoff debut, set a franchise record for saves and win the game, I'm not sure I would have believed you. So he was spectacular, everything he's been, and then some for the Wild this season. Interesting enough, though, like the Wild have said, you know, time and time again, leading into the playoffs, even as the playoffs have started, they plan to use both goalies. I think they would be crazy not to come back with Gustafson tonight, but I do think Marc-Andre Fleury is going to play a role in this series as well. So kind of a two-headed monster for the Wild. We'll see how they kind of divvy up the playing time moving forward.
Well, you know, another key component for the Wild is that Kirill Kaprizov, obviously a high-end player, and it's kind of been something that the Wild have lacked, you know, dating back to when they dished out those big contracts for Parisi and Suter, and they were obviously hoping that those guys could be your franchise face guys. It didn't work out, and they were kind of stuck in perpetual mediocrity, and now they have a player that can really, it appears to be, is helping get them out of that mediocre tier, and there he was on the score sheet again on Monday night. It just feels like he has a knack for these big games and really wants to be out there in the biggest of moments, right?
Yeah, he's so good. I think he already has 10 career playoff goals to his name. He's just constantly, you know, around the dangerous areas in the offensive zone. You know, attracts a ton of attention, and that opens up, you know, shooting lanes for his teammates as well. But if Kirill has the puck on his stick in the offensive zone, the Wild feel really good about that. They feel really confident. He's the best player this franchise has ever had. I think we can already say that. You know, I understand Zach Parise and Ryan Suter did a lot of good for Minnesota. I understand Marian Gaborik was a game breaker back in the early 2000s. But I mean, Kirill Kaprizov, when he's on his game, he's a top five player, and the Wild have never had that. You know, he has to continue to do it. He hasn't been out of the first round yet. That's something he made note of last year. He had a great playoffs, but statistics wise, and then the Wild lost to the Blues in six games. So, Kirill Kaprizov understands that, you know, his legacy will be decided by how long or how far he can take the Wild in the playoffs, not by, you know, putting up 100 points in his second year like he did last year. And, you know, he got banged up towards the end of the year, so he didn't do that again, but he was well on his way. Those stats are good and well, but Kirill has his eyes on deep playoff runs, and, you know, with him as the straw that stirs the drink, mm-hmm. I think at some point we'll see that, you know, maybe even as soon as this year.
Every team in the Stanley Cup playoffs does need to have those depth components as well, though, middle six forwards that can really contribute, and, you know, second and third pair defensemen that can log a lot of minutes. And I feel like one of those guys, perhaps, you know, I'm curious to get your thoughts on Sam Steele. He had a big goal on Monday night. And, you know, occasionally you see this in every sport where you get a change of scenery guy who's still young. And not that he had an outstanding season or anything, but it was better for him in Minnesota. Like, is there hope here that, you know, they might have found something where this guy can stick as a solid depth forward and contribute and have some moments like he had on Monday night?
I think so, and I think that what they've liked about Sam Steele is that he's been super versatile and has never at any point this season complained about playing time. This is a kid who, like you said, signed a one-year contract with the Wild coming over from Anaheim. Anaheim basically gave up on him and, you know, let him go. And he signs a one-year contract with the Wild. He's playing number one center minutes between Kirill Kaprizov and Matt Zuccarello for a large chunk of the early portion of this season. And then he's a healthy scratch for like 10 straight games, and his demeanor on and off the ice is the same no matter what. And I think that's allowed him to kind of parachute in and out of the lineup. He wasn't playing for a lot, you know, before the playoffs, and anytime he would get an opportunity, he would make the most of it. And that's why he's in right now. Joel Eriksson-Ek is out with a lower body injury. I think we'll see him at some point in the playoff series. But if Joel Eriksson-Ek never suffered that injury down the stretch in the regular season, Sam Steele would be sitting in the press box with us. Joel Eriksson-Ek did, and Sam Steele continued to do what he does, which is make the most of his opportunity. You know, he obviously tied the game at 2-2 when the Wild were kind of grinding on Monday night. Not sure they win the game without Sam Steele in the lineup.
What do you make of the incident with Matt Dumba and Joe Pavelski on Monday night?
Yeah, super unfortunate. I don't think it was a dirty legal hit. I think maybe it was a bit unnecessary. But I think by the rule book, he hit him in the shoulder, and Pavelski's head hit the ice, and it was just a really sobering moment inside the arena watching that happen. Pavelski's one of the greats, one of the great guys in the game, and yeah. Obviously he's been doing it for so long. And anytime you see a guy face down on the ice, it's tough. But when you see a guy who's 38 years old, who's done it all, who's so respected by literally everyone in the league, woozy and unable to get up off the ice, it's tough to see. And I don't think Matt Dumba was trying to knock Joel Pavelski out of the game. I think he saw his opportunity, and this is Matt Dumba's a guy who's laid open ice hits throughout this season. And a big hit was there in front of him, and he finished his check. And everything else that happened after that, I think, was extremely unfortunate. But I don't think Dumba's this dirty player. I know he has, you know, Stars fans may feel differently. But I've covered this guy a long time, and Dumba's a great dude. And I don't think he would outwardly go target one of the best players that we know in this league as far as people-wise and try and knock him out of the series. So unfortunate what happened. You never want to see that. I certainly feel for Joe Pavelski. But I hope that it's not something that spills over into game 2, 3, 4, 5 where, you know, the Stars are trying to seek retribution and go at Dumba. It is what it is. It happened. Let's try and move on as best we can.
It feels like we're in for a long series, right? These two teams obviously saw each other a lot in the regular season, highly competitive game one. If Dallas can just turn the mental page, this will be a long one, right?
Yeah, I think so. I would be pretty surprised if this thing isn't going 6 or 7. Put it this way, I'm so confident the Wild aren't winning 4 straight. I already booked my flight back to 5, and I'm already thinking about booking my flight back to 7. So I think we're in for a really long series, a really good series, and dig in. Let's have some fun.
That's what it's all about this time of year on the ice, as the Stanley Cup playoffs continue tonight with 4 Game 2s, one of them the Dallas Stars and the Minnesota Wild. Dane, for your sake and all the writers, I hope you don't get 2 more overtimes, but we'll see what happens. Dane Mucitani from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, thanks for joining us on the Progressive Guest Line.
Hey, thank you so much. Anytime.
Okay. We will take one final timeout. By the way, I feel bad for NHL writers that have to put up with that nonsense of lower body, upper body injury when he mentioned that with Joel Eriksson-Ek. I don't get how PR staffs and how the league allows that stuff to keep happening. Just a pet peeve of mine. One final timeout, and then we get out of Dodge for a Wednesday. First Name Sports, Sportsnet Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
You know, I saw this today and thought, well, I'm going to at least find a spot in the rundown for it. The New York Post. There's a, let's see if I can get this guy's name. The report by Brian Lewis from the New York Post. That Ben Simmons has been attacking rehab, and he's been engaged. And there's a lot of belief in him being able to return to his all-star form. And I just chuckle at that because I'm a Sixers fan. I went through this every single year, and I know the way the Ben Simmons news cycle operates. And if we want to look at the NBA calendar as such, at the beginning of every year, there is a new hope. this year's going to be different. He's going to do X, Y, and Z that he's never done before or that he hasn't done in a while. He's finally going to have a jump shot. Okay? Then in the second, you know, in the middle portion of the season, he's not doing X, Y, and Z that everybody thinks he could. And he's just clogging up space on the court. And it's a little bit of a slog. And he just doesn't stretch the floor on offense. You can't really play him in the half court because, yeah, he can pass well, but that's more utilized when you're out and running and gunning. And, you know, he just is hard to figure out how to use in half court sets. So you realize, oh, well, it's not really any different. And then towards the end of the season, there's an injury. There's like a, like my back hurts, even though I had random days off and like don't appear to be trying that hard on the basketball court. Like he gets injured and then he's out for like 4 months and you don't see him. And then when the season's over, it's reports like this where it's he's attacking his rehab with a reinvigorated life and he's going to get back to his all-star form. And then in the offseason, there's videos of him shooting jumpers in an empty gym with no defenders. Maybe he's actually going to shoot this year. And then we're back to the beginning of the year again where it's the same cycle over and over and over again. This dude should just retire. I mean, it's the same thing over and nothing changes. Guy was the first overall pick in 2016. It's almost been 7 years now, once we get to the draft this summer. If you haven't improved on the things that you weren't doing coming out of college, 7 years later, you're not, you could fool me six times, but that seventh time, you better do it. And trust me, you don't get six tries with me, but I'm just kind of schmoozing a bit here. So, The people that report this stuff, I mean, even they must think, and again, our guy Brian here, maybe he just wants some retweets and some clicks, but it makes me almost feel like, wait a second, like, you cover the Nets. You know the whole deal here. Whoever's tipping you off on that, whether it's Simmons himself, or somebody in Simmons' inner circle. Not a part of you is not like, hey, we've done this before. You've told me that. You told me 3 years ago things are going to be different. Like, same thing. Anyway, tonight's action in the NHL and in the NBA, we have a quartet of game twos on the ice. The New York Islanders, I believe, will even that series with the Carolina Hurricanes. I think that that's a low-scoring grudge match type of series, which I just don't see a team like the Islanders laying down in that series, even though they are the underdog. So I think the Islanders will find a way to get even with the Carolina Hurricanes heading back to Long Island. I'm sure it will be buzzing this weekend at UBS Arena, the first time they've played a playoff game in that building. The Islanders needed a new building there on Long Island, and they finally got their own place that will host a playoff game for the first time on, I think, Friday night. The Florida Panthers are in Beantown still for game two. And I talked about this yesterday when we were reacting a little bit to game one. The Panthers, I think, at the very least, proved they belonged on the same sheet of ice as the Boston Bruins. And that's a portion of the battle when you're talking about a mammoth of a team that the Bruins were, where they were just slaughtering everyone in the regular season. Set the record for most wins in an NHL regular season. I think Florida will keep the game competitive tonight. I think it will be a decent hockey game. And I'm not going to necessarily say that they'll win, but I won't be surprised if they do. So that game's in Boston tonight, game two of that series. Obviously, these are all game twos. We talked a lot with Dane Musiatani from the St. Paul Pioneer Press about game two between Minnesota and Dallas. Very curious to see the first period from Dallas tonight. Because I think that can go one of two ways. Either they get scored on and they feel a little deflated. There's a little bit of negative carryover from losing in double overtime in a game that ended past 1 a.m. local time there in Dallas. Or maybe they come out really guns a-blazing, ready to put it behind them, and they're blitzing the Wild in the first period. So that'll be interesting. And then, speaking of teams that need to respond, the Edmonton Oilers at home tonight for Game 2 against the Los Angeles Kings. The Kings stole the game up in Alberta on Monday night in Game 1, and they'll do it again tonight for Game 2, with the Kings having already accomplished the goal for all these road teams of getting a split at the very least. And, you know, I think Edmonton, Connor McDavid was kept off the score sheet on Monday night, and he's too good to have that continue. So I expect Edmonton to win, and I think that's, again, a sneaky long series. I think with the high-end talent that Edmonton has and having gotten to the conference finals last year, there's a maybe a bit of a perception that Edmonton will coast through Los Angeles, and I just don't see that. So I do think, though, at home tonight, I will take the Oilers to even that series up. On the NBA hardwood, it's a trio of games. Game twos, these are, between the Grizzlies and the Lakers, as we talked about with our guest in the beginning of the show from the Daily Memphian. Ja Morant and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, that's what we're looking at in the NBA with these injuries. Ja, game time decision. I believe Giannis was listed as doubtful for Milwaukee. As, you know, if you're the Heat, like, I know we say, well, get your split and go back home, but if you got a chance to grab another one with Giannis out, you know, I think you want to be pedal to the metal for sure tonight if you're Miami. I think Memphis, even without Morant, wins tonight. I expect the guest brought up, like, they've been without Ja in several big moments previously. So I expect Memphis to be, at the very least, competitive. And by the way, I don't know if this is an indicator that he might play, but I saw, at least at my book, Memphis opened as a 1-point underdog. They flipped to a 1-point favorite. So, you know, maybe an indicator that Ja might be able to go. And then Minnesota and Denver tonight. Gosh, if I'm a Minnesota sports fan, I think I'm probably watching the Wild. I just, you know, the Timberwolves and the Nuggets tonight is kind of a blah series. And, you know, again, there's a lot of exciting ones, actually, in the NBA for the first round, which is nice. As Phoenix got even last night with the Clippers, that looks like it's going to be a fun, long series out west. Ditto for Memphis and the Lakers. And, of course, Sacramento and the Warriors. The Warriors aren't on the board yet in the series, but it certainly has been pretty juicy there. You know, and in the East, it's not as exciting in the NBA, but you do have Milwaukee, and this whole Giannis thing kind of hanging over the Bucks is something that certainly looks like cause for concern. And Cleveland got even last night with the New York Knickerbockers. So that's just a little bit of a whip around to go through some of the scheduling. And like I said, it's just nice when there's always something exciting to look forward to on the tube from a sports viewing pleasure, and we don't have to talk ourselves into something that we know is not that important. And there are portions of the sports calendar that we have to do that. But right now we're in a very fun time of year in sports. That'll wrap things up for us on a Wednesday afternoon. Thanks to our two guests. John Bellmer, as always, has been your producer. And we'll do it again tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, here on the SportsMap Radio Network, as similar kind of Stanley Cup playoff, NBA playoff whip around. And there's always so much NFL rumors to dive into this time of year. And like I said, I think the Trey Lance ones are real. I think he'll have a new team by the end of next week, but I'm sure there'll be some other rumor that I can either dispel or buy into. So, like I said, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 to 3 Central tomorrow. We do it again. My name is Greg Frank. This has been First Name Sports, signing off. Sports Map Radio.